Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. This hour on the program, we'll talk about the work you do every day, your job. And we're also going to talk about your life's work, your vocation. Well, are they one and the same? You know, some jobs you just go to work every day. They feel dry. They're not nourishing. They're rote. They're routine. Does that describe your work? Or some work may feel full and rich and satisfying. It may be the place you feel it's right to be. In short, it might be your vocation. This hour, we'll talk about discovering your vocation, about finding out what you were meant to do, about work not just as a means for making a living, but as the medium through which you become a person, in the words of my guest this hour, spiritual writer Thomas Moore. He's the author of Care of the Soul, and Thomas Moore's new book is A Life at Work. It's subtitled The Joy of Discovering What You Were Born to Do. Welcome back to Open Line. Tom Moore, great to have you here.
Thanks, Brad. Thanks for having me.
And when you'd like to join the conversation after we have a little groundwork laid here, 614-292-8513. Well, Tom, we'd like to work, I guess ideally all of us, we want to work at the tasks or collection of tasks that we feel this is deeply what feels right to us, kind of what we're supposed to be doing. Is there a supposed to be doing or you say what we were born to do? Are we born to do things?
Yes, I think so. I think that each of us is unique. I mean, I've been working now as a therapist for 30 years, and I'm more convinced than ever that we're each unique people and have a different calling to what we should do. So, and what I want to do is connect what we do with who we are. And, you know, maybe even we don't know exactly who we are, and maybe that's the problem with our work sometimes. But I'd like to reconnect those two things.
Tell me about a calling. What is that?
Well, the word, it's interesting, the word calling is used. Vocation, you know, comes from the Latin word vox, which means voice. So, I mean, there's a sense that I think in people intuitively that when you're trying to figure out what you should do with your life, that you have to listen. You have to listen to a call. Either it's, you know, someone's telling you, whispering to you, I don't know if it's always a call, but a quiet call, telling you what you could do. And those voices sometimes are internal. So I think we do operate daily by internal voices, and that might be part of it. Another is that people who talk to us about what we're doing, either maybe our customers or the people we serve or family and friends, they're telling us in a way about our work all the time. And I think we could listen to their voices, too, to get a sense of that call.
Yeah, sometimes, I mean, if the people we serve, the customers you know, for example, are saying to us, gee, you do that awfully well, and it's such a pleasure dealing with you. Or on the other hand, you know, you're really not a very pleasant person to deal with. I mean, you don't want to give them the soul judgment over you, but you do want to pay attention to that. Huh?
Yes, I think you can listen to it without taking it as the final word or a criticism. You can listen to it and say, well, voices are telling me, and the world is telling me that maybe I'm not doing the right job. You know, this idea of, I mentioned in this book, daimon, it's like an inner voice or urge. Mm-hmm. That is often in tradition. I mean, that's a very old idea. It says that it tells us where to go. It guides us more negatively than positively. So in other words, those inner voices tell us more what not to do rather than what to do. So that's the first guidance. You know, what should we not be doing? That's the first thing to ask.
So sometimes, you know, you may be offered a job or a particular, maybe a promotion, and your inner voice might say to you, this doesn't feel right. This promotion, you know, you're not really a management person, and even though it's more money, maybe you shouldn't take it. Or this job situation somebody's offering you in another position in another company, it seems very good on the surface, but something inside you says, this is not right.
That's right. So you have to take that voice into consideration. Now, I think sometimes you have to discriminate. I mean, it might be fear, you know, that's really speaking to you. You're hearing your fear saying, yeah, you know, I'm afraid of moving ahead and going to something new. So you have to sort out things. You have to say, well, is this voice telling me not to do this, or is it fear? I think if you sit down and think about it, and if you have someone you can talk to about it, you'll be able to decide what kind of a voice that is.
That may be a tough thing sometimes. I think, you know, in my own life, I've often wondered in regard to a particular opportunity that I've thought, no, that doesn't feel right. And you really do have to distinguish between, as you say, a fear of something new and something that might pose challenges for you, and a real reluctance based on this just doesn't fit me. Yeah.
Yes, one of the things I write about in this book, I have a chapter on care of the soul and work, And my thought there is that we would be better off. I think we'd find it easier to find our way in relation to work if all the time we were closer to ourselves, if we were listening to those impulses from within. So if you're just starting out and saying, well, I've never done it before, it takes some learning. You know, you have to figure that process out. But I think it would help if in everything, all day long, we were closer to our inner guidance and to sort out that guidance from the fears that we have.
Yeah, because as you point out, for some employers in some job situations, some employers, as you write, are not really interested in our unique contribution, right? The thing that makes us creative and gives life to our work. They may be more interested in somebody fulfilling a certain task in a very prescribed and pre-prescribed way.
Yes, well, I think that's true, but I think it's also the whole... Our whole idea, our imagination of work today tends to be in that direction. Not only employers, but people looking for work. You know, I've had some people criticize this book of mine because I don't tell them exactly what to do. You know, and to me, it's more important to ask the deeper questions and to prepare yourself for work and to ask what you want to do with your life and to connect your work with the rest of your life. All those much deeper issues, I think, are important. But we don't think that way usually.
My guest, Thomas Moore, his new book, A Life at Work, it's subtitled The Joy of Discovering What You Were Born to Do. In a few minutes, we'll go to your questions at 614-292-8513. Tom, you say ask some of the deeper questions. Like what?
Well, you can ask. One thing I suggest, and I've been practicing with some people since this book came out, is to explore your family. You know, your family situation. Now, I don't mean to be a typical psychologist saying go into your childhood. What I mean there is that the experience of your family, your parents, grandparents, other relatives, is very significant in relation to your work because you have learned from them, you've observed them and seen where they have failed and where they have succeeded, and you've picked up some of their attitudes, and you almost identify with some of those people. And I think it's worth examining that. That's a way of going deeper into your search for work, to look at your family and see what's gone on and talk about it. I've been doing that with people, and it's amazing how much comes out and how closely tied one's past is to the present.
Tom, can you give me an example of that?
Yes, I write in this book about my neighbor who lives across the street from me, even now as we speak. One day I asked him if he would help me out to sort out some of these issues of work. And we got talking, and I said, would you tell me about your parents? And he said, well, they don't have any relevance to this. You know, I mean, they've got to live their own life. It's really nothing to do with me. I said, well, just humor me. You know, just talk about it. So he started talking about his dad, who was in sort of a financial advisor, and he realized that his father's attitude toward work was something that he was bumping into in his own life. Hmm. He could see his dad, really his dad, and even his father's father. That whole generational thing having an impact on him, as intelligent and as creative that he is in his own life, he could begin to feel that. He was astonished.
Were those attitudes of his father toward work productive, or were they unproductive?
They were both, but mostly unproductive.
Yeah. So we can absorb attitudes toward work from our family. You know, I mean, we make it the message from our family that, I mean, as one I can think of with a friend of mine said that her father never liked his work very much, and she got the message that, you know, work is just something you do to bring home the bacon and put food on the table, but don't expect anything more from it.
Right.
And that's not right, of course.
Well, you know, those sayings, the things that people say, or the things that parents say, especially those kind of little bits of philosophy, they stick. You know, they stick with you, and you may disagree with them, but they stick with you, and they still have their impact.
Yeah, they do. Another thing you suggest is going back in our own lives and looking at some of the things that we were attracted to, even at a very young age. And I remember when I was very young, I used to listen to the radio all the time, right?
Mm.
And my father would say to me, why are you wasting all that time listening to the radio?
Right.
You know? And I didn't know why I was wasting all – I mean, if it was a waste, I didn't know. But it turned out there was a real reason for that.
Yes. Well, I think that's true of a lot of people. Not everybody, but a lot of people say that. I think I talk to doctors sometimes, the surgeons, you know, they said they started operating on their friends when they were 5 years old. You know what I mean? That kind of play, that really does suggest that there's something, you know, inside a person and pulling them forward into some kind of work. Now, some people will say, well, I've really gone in a lot of different directions. And so that doesn't apply. But I think if you look deeper into the different jobs you've had, you often see something in common from one job to the next.
Uh-huh.
And my story is like that. You know, I started out at 13, leaving home to try to become a priest. And I gave that up and it was when I was in my 20s. And I looked, you know, tried to do some other things. And now, you know, here I am writing books on the soul, and I'd say probably once a month I'm in a church talking about the soul. You know, I'm still doing it, even though I'm not doing it the way I thought I would.
So in other words, you are a priest in a sense.
Yes, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. And you make the point, don't, you know, try to find out what it is, as you say, you were born to do, what you love to do, but try not to identify it with a particular job or a particular kind of job, right?
Yes, I think we have to be open to a lot of possibilities, and also I think it takes time to find your life work. See, this is what I had in mind as I was writing this book: is how do you find your life work? Not how do you find a job? How do you find a life work? And I think that's something you do all your life, and so you might go from one experiment to another, one job to another, but if you keep in mind where you're headed and who you are. Then eventually, I think you'll see that you know, you may end up where you feel you're much closer to the work that you should be doing. On the other hand, then the things, the failures that you've had or the experiments you made don't have to be seen as mistakes. They are part of that process of finding your way.
So finding our life's work may take, I mean, some time, and you might not have hints from your childhood about what it might be.
I think you may not. I think for some people, they don't get hints because, you know, I talk to a lot of people who just look, they feel like their brain is empty, you know, like they know that what they're doing is not right, but they have no idea where to go next. I think that is a bit of a symptom sometimes of being disconnected from yourself. So I was trying to suggest before that it wouldn't be a bad idea to, you know, to try to get a sense of who you are as an individual and not be so persuaded by the media and by the world around you. I think a lot of people, when they think of work, they automatically think of certain standards of success that are just in the air that the culture talks about. And that really doesn't have much to do with who they are.
Tom, when you say find out who you are, can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, I mean, just what I mean, I don't mean that too, you know, ethereally. What I mean is that you just get a sense of how you are different in some ways from other people that you know. I mean, you may have a friend who's great in math and science, and there you are. You know, you can't do anything with that. Here, I'm talking about myself.
Yeah, me too.
and you wish maybe you could do something else, and you see that there are good job opportunities in all those spheres, but they're not for you. What are you? In other words, what are you good at? What do you love? I think this word love in relation to work is an important one. I don't mean it sentimentally. I just mean, can you really love the things you're doing? Can you, you know, do you want to get up in the morning and do it? Are you watching the clock, or are you really absorbed in what your tasks are? And I think those are all signs of loving your work. And love is an issue that really you have to take seriously.
So are we absorbed in our tasks at our particular job, or if it's a formal straight job or not a formal straight job? Is it something that calls forth a response from us, or is it utterly routine? And I suppose years could go by and one might not pay attention to that.
Well, I think that's the trouble. Some people who have finally, you know, they finally woke up and discovered that they were in the wrong place. And have left. They've often left a job because they've really felt the pain of it. They may have been drinking too much, or their relationships may be falling apart. Your children may suffer. These are all indications that your work is not in the right spot, not in the right place. So sometimes for some people, that change comes from these much stronger signals that are personal and quite destructive.
Tom, in a life at work, you tell us about a priest you talked to in his 70s who'd been a priest for 50 years, and he didn't feel he had a calling to the priesthood after all that time. What was that all about?
Well, I think what happened, that's complicated. I think what happened was that he reached a point in his life when he realized how much he had given up in order to be a priest. And he also discovered that he had done it because he felt, at least his interpretation was, that he was living out his father's wish, his own wish to be a priest, not for his son, but for his own wish to be a priest. And he felt that he had sacrificed his life, and he felt kind of depressed and unhappy and empty at that point. And he felt that well, he didn't have a vocation after all, even though he had been a priest all those years and had done a lot of good work. And what I noticed with this man is that I saw him in social situations, and I saw what a good priest he was. You know, he was really good with people. I knew he was suffering interiorly because he didn't feel he was in the right place. But I just thought he probably was misinterpreting his situation. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think happens quite often, that we explain and interpret our situations according to our emotions. But those interpretations are not always correct, I think. And that's why it's good to be in dialogue, either with a friend or, in his case, with a therapist, where you can sort those things out.
So, no, it was clear to you watching him in action that he was very effective as a priest and a counselor.
Yes.
Yeah, and so he may have been, in a sense, misunderstanding the situation.
Yes. I didn't take his statement that wasn't his vocation. I didn't take that statement literally and seriously. I thought that I understood his emotion, that it was an expression of his feeling, but it was not an expression of his life when you stood back and looked at it.
Of course, I suppose that it's possible that somebody could do something very well, I mean, be a very good physician or a very good lawyer or whatever, or a very good carpenter, and yet, even though they do it very well, it not be their vocation, it not be their love.
Oh, yes, that's right. I think this happens quite often. People are very good at what they do, and that's why it's hard for them to leave that work, because they're doing it well and they're getting good feedback, but they know that it isn't them deep inside. Now, you know, in the case of that priest, I can't go into the whole story. I felt with after, you know, many, many weeks of very intimate conversation, that was my judgment, that was an expression of his feeling. Mm-hmm. But I know other people who do their work, have done their work very well, but they did have to leave their jobs because even though they were succeeding in them, they felt they were in the wrong place.
Yeah. Thomas Moore, his new book, A Life at Work, The Joy of Discovering What You Were Born to Do, at 614-292-8513. Bruce is on the line. Hello, Bruce.
Hello. So good to speak with you, sir. I was, my childhood games play in general, and I've become a peace general for the Peace Army for Mental Health, and we have a diagnosis called injustice sensitivity syndrome, where people are upset by the injustices of the world which causes ailments, and the treatment is to make the world better, and my treatment is to work for peace and justice. And I was wondering if you could explain the therapeutic benefits of making a better world.
Oh, yes. I'm glad you brought that up. I write about this in this book, that I think a lot of people are unhappy in their work because they are so focused on themselves or just looking at the paycheck, and they realize it's empty, that it doesn't give them what they want. And the solution to that is so simple. It's to get out of yourself, you know, to make a contribution to the world. One example I have, it's maybe similar to what you're talking about, is I've been interviewing nurses lately, and nurses have been telling me how much they get, how much benefit they have, and how they feel they're in the right work because they're giving something to these sick people around them. And they will spend extra hours in a day and not even think about it, not worry about it, because they are so caught up in their work. I was surprised to hear that from so many nurses. And I think it just confirms this idea that if we could see that part of our life work has to be to make a contribution to this world, I think we'd all be much better off emotionally and psychologically.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Bruce?
Thank you.
Great. Thanks for your call. Interesting. Tom, you said two things. You said if you could just get out of yourself a little bit.
Yes.
At the same time, you're saying it's almost paradoxical. You're saying, but get into yourself, find out what it is you love to do. Yeah.
Paradoxes don't worry me too much.
Yeah, right.
But yes, it's true that. But I think both of those things have to be done. In order to find your life work, you do have to be close to yourself. Like, let's say the example of the nurses. If you might meet a nurse who really is in the wrong profession. They're there because their father was a doctor or their mother was a nurse, something like that, or their father was a nurse. And they get into this profession sort of automatically, and they realize this is not for them. So that's very important. On the other hand, at the very same time when you are close to yourself and find work that is an expression of who you are, you can decide at that point, I think, you can ask yourself, am I making a contribution to this world or not? Is this company I'm working for or with, are they ethical or not? Are they making a contribution? Is there another way I can work where I could really feel that I'm giving something to the world? And I think that giving is a good tonic, medicine for the feeling of being stuck and just, absorbed in yourself or just worrying about the paycheck.
Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to understand this. You say, Tom, being absorbed in yourself. But if you're doing something that you know is a service, right, to others, and it is tapping your deepest abilities and you love it, what's the danger here in becoming absorbed in yourself? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah. Well, I guess these things do have to be sorted out some. What I'm talking about is, let's say, several things. One is that a person could be in a job and some people, are looking for prestige or power mm-hmm. or money, and which is fine. All those things are legitimate to a point. But they may get to a point where they realize that this is only about themselves, really, that it's trying to, fill up some emptiness in them.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't really... it's not enough motivation to be at a particular kind of job. Now, so I'm saying, well, you can look more at yourself and see who you are. What work would reflect who you feel that you are as a unique person, your own particular loves and interests and abilities. And you find that work. And then beyond that, if it still is not sufficient, the next step is to consider, should I now be thinking of a way to really do something for the world? I mean, there's something going on that, the world is in bad shape and there's so much need around me. Maybe I could do something that would contribute something to the world. And I do notice myself that when people do that, that they themselves feel fulfilled, so that there's a kind of paradox there that by going outside of themselves, they fulfill that deep need that is within them.
Tom, do you think every vocation, every life's work is automatically a service to the world? I mean, I'm thinking of somebody who, let's say, is a wonderful painter. They paint lovely pictures, and maybe they never sell because in their lifetime they're not recognized.
Right.
How many stories do we know about that?
I know.
And nonetheless, maybe they give some away. To me, that's a service to the world. If that's so is every true vocation a service?
That's a good question. I had to think about that for a few hours, I'm afraid.
Okay.
I think, though, I can say something. I do think that there's such a thing as an explicit, concrete way of giving service. I mean, there are jobs that are clearly service-oriented work. Now, some people may have a job that gives them a pretty good living. I know a number of people doing it this way. They have a job that gives them a good living, and that allows them then to have the freedom to volunteer or to do some kind of service work that is not really their job, not what gives them their money, but is still part of their work, their mm-hmm. life work. So I think you can do it that way. I do think that it would be a good idea for all of us to consider how we could explicitly do something for the world around us. Even if you're a painter and you're working out your great artistic abilities mm-hmm. and talent, I think even so you could think of ways, as my wife does, she does public art as well as private art. She goes out there, and whenever there's some big trauma in our society, she goes out with her art and gathers her artist friends. And they do something in the world,
uh-huh.
Very public and obvious. I think that we could do that, that we could do more of that, that we could realize that each one of us has the opportunity and maybe even the calling to add something to the society in which we live.
We're talking this hour with Thomas Moore. His new book is A Life at Work. It's subtitled The Joy of Discovering What You Were Born to Do. Callers, stay with us, and we'll go to your calls and be back with my guest right after these messages on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Next time on Day to Day, take some surfer dudes.
Man, Bonehead's really swinging.
Some sexy babes.
Fill me up, huh?
Sure.
And some cheap thrills.
Some kind of monsters killing people and drinking their blood.
Oh, very funny, Miss Ghoul.
So what do you get?
What are we waiting for?
Let's have a party!
Dig those crazy beach movies.
I'm not sure this is such a good idea.
Next time on Day to Day.
Today at noon on WOSU 820, NPR News. WOSU presents the 24th Annual Musicians Against Childhood Cancer Bluegrass Classic, July 23rd through July 26th at Hoover Y Park. Proceeds will benefit St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. For more information, visit bluegrassclassic.com. Support for WOSU comes from the Columbus Metropolitan Club, where everyone is welcome to be a part of the live discussion at weekly luncheons. More information at www.columbusmetroclub.org.
Hi, I'm Leanne Hansen. Every Sunday, Weekend Edition is there for you. Whether we're following Mexican guest workers now employed in Louisiana's seafood industry or reporting from Boston to Baghdad on events that are changing the world. Daniel Schorr is there too with his long view, and Will Shortz is always there with a mind-boggling puzzle. So be there with us Sunday mornings on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Sunday mornings from 8 to 10 on WOSU.
Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820, NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. We're talking about your life's work this hour, the work you just love to do, your vocation that may well be in service to others as well. I mean, if you just have a job where you go to work every day and it feels dry and not nourishing and rote and routine, there are ways of finding something that connects more with who you really are. And we're talking about that issue this hour with spiritual writer Thomas Moore. He's the author, you know, his classic Care of the Soul. Tom's new book is A Life at Work, The Joy of Discovering What You Were Born to Do. We're at 614-292-8513. Let us go right back to our callers. And hello, Tom, you're on the line.
Good morning. I'm sure that both of you have heard the old saying, if you have a job that you like, you'll never work a day in your life. And I believe that's true. And I retired after 50 years at my job and can truly say I enjoyed it and probably would still be working if I could have found a way to slow down. But one of my colleagues one time in a conversation said that the worst day of the week for him was Sunday. He hated Sundays. And I asked him why. He said, because I'm thinking tomorrow is Monday and I got to get up and start another day's work. And you know, I always feel sorry for that attitude. My question for Mr. Moore is this. Do you feel that guidance counselors in the schools generally do a good job of helping young people find a direction for their life?
That's really a good question, Tom. I'm not in a position to make a big judgment about that, but I can tell you a couple of things. I teach psychotherapists and counselors. I teach them. I've been teaching in the summers quite often now for many years, and I'm awfully impressed by the people doing this work. I think it's a difficult job, and I'm impressed. I think generally people are really doing their best in this business. On the other hand, I think that I also get the feeling, having spoken to large audiences of counselors, that that many of them are caught up in the ways of thinking that are in the culture at large and that you pick up in the media. So, you know, just as people talk about school, the purpose of school is to train kids to get a good job and make a good living, rather than maybe to become interesting people and educated people and, you know, be actively involved in their society. I think that counselors sometimes get caught up in this idea that you give kids tests and you're trying to steer them toward a job that's going to, give them the living that they want. It can be mechanistic in that way, but that's the philosophy of our time. So I'm trying to, to be this voice coming through and joining other voices saying, let's think more deeply about it and let's deepen our guidance, especially of young people looking for work. Let's inspire them to maybe, see their role in the world and inspire them to see that they have to be in touch with their own nature and find some deeper rewards.
Colin, you said a very interesting thing. You said you would still be doing the work you did if you could have found a way to slow down with it. Tell us a little about that.
Yes. Well, I can tell you I'm a retired dentist. And after 50 years, you build up, your patients become your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And you're very busy, which is good. I like that. But then when I reached my 70s, I thought, it's not as easy to continue doing that, but I still enjoy doing it. But you try to slow down, and you find it's hard, it's difficult to tell someone who's been a friend and a patient that you can't take them anymore,
mm-hmm.
even when you have a closed practice. But, for instance, I don't think I ever took more than a week off vacation all that time because, first of all, you work hard before you leave to catch up with everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get back, since there's no one there that can do your job for you, they're all waiting for you.
You got a big backlog now. Yeah.
And you think about that on your vacation. And when you come back, you work hard and you think, maybe was it worth taking the week off?
I understand, yeah.
And so that was, I just could not find a way to do that comfortably.
Tom Moore, I was going to say that our caller, Tom, brought up this idea in my mind that so often that circumstances demand, a certain kind of speed in working or a certain kind of volume of work that may even take a real vocation and turn it into not very much. I mean, it seems to me that speed and volume at great speed are the enemies of true vocation. What do you think?
Well, there's a kind of way in which so many of us get caught up in the busyness of our work and all the labors, all the things that have to be done around them. I find that myself as well. What one solution to that might be to see that that work really cannot be separated from other parts of life. So if you're going to look at your life work and you want to be happy with your work, I think you do have to set some limits in order to allow other parts of your life to have their time. People do hobbies like gardening or, various things, or they travel, or, obviously a lot of people give a lot of attention and time to their children growing
mm-hmm,
up.
Sure.
All of that is part of the life work. I think it's a mistake to think that the job is your life work.
Yeah.
All of it is, and these are different facets of it. And I think if we did that, we might have a better chance of not just being so driven by the job. I know it's a tough thing. We'd have to sit down for hours, talk about how we can get dentists, to have some time off. But it'd be worth it because other parts of life are really important.
Caller, Tom, thanks you very much for calling.
Thank you.
So Tom Moore, you're saying that when we think of our vocation, first of all, I think you talk about multiple vocations. It's not necessarily just one thing.
That's right.
Yeah, and now you're saying as well that think of your whole life in a sense. I mean, the vocation of your family and your friends and other such things as well, huh?
Yes. I would think of the calling as having all these different facets or that there are different doors to it, many different parts to it. It's not just one solid thing. And we can do many things at once, but I think we could live our lives, our work lives, in such a way that we account for family. So many people get caught up in work so much that they neglect their marriage or their family or their children, or they have no time to relax or to do other interesting things in their lives. And there are always good reasons, that we can use to be so dedicated to the work. But I think if we had a bigger vision, which is why I often recommend having a strong philosophy of life, to have thought these things through and to say, so you don't have to make these decisions on the spot all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a philosophy of life that says, my work is very important, but it's not the whole story.
Yeah. All right, let us go to our next caller here. Hi, Becky. You're on the air with us.
Yes. What I'm enjoying listening to your guest's viewpoint. I am concerned a bit about people who are not artists or writers or doctors or something like that. We have a lot of jobs in our society that need to be performed, but they don't have the notoriety, perhaps, of some of these others. We need people to work on our streets. We need people to work in our grocery stores. What about them?
Well, I have them in mind myself. A lot of the people I've been talking to have jobs like this. There are two ways you look at this. Look at people who are writers and artists, a writer like me, you know, and I've got my own problems trying to keep up with it all, too. But then the person who is doing the jobs that seem quite ordinary, those jobs can be done in such a way, and they can be very fulfilling, depending on how they're done, and they can also be done in a way that they do contribute to the community. I mean, most people know that there are shops you can go to where the people working there really create a community. They really help the spirit of community in a neighborhood. And it's a place you want to go to because you know you won't be treated just like another, you know, body coming into to a shop. So I think the style, the way in which we do these jobs can be very important. Obviously, there are jobs that people are doing that they wish they don't have to, they didn't have to do. And we as a society, I think, and also employers have to consider the person when we are hiring people. I don't think we are humane enough yet in imagining work. And when we talk about jobs and, you know, in the larger picture of how many people have jobs and all that, we don't think much about the quality of the work. So we have to do that. But I think we also can consider the way in which we do this ordinary work.
So some of it is our approach to whatever job we're doing. My mother once said that any job that's honorable is okay because you can find a way to do it with an attitude of service.
That's right. Any job. I just know lots of people doing very, very simple jobs, and they obviously love their work because of the job itself, but because of the way they can interact with people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much.
Becky, thanks for your call. Yeah, a time I think we can all think of, there's a waitress I'm thinking of in town here at a particular restaurant who just makes it a joyful experience to go to the restaurant.
Right.
She's obviously she's been there for years. I mean, she's a real veteran, and she knows how to make you feel at home, and she's very personal and charming, and it makes it, and I'm sure she loves what she's doing. And I'm thinking of another person who used to work in town here for one of the coffee bars, you know, who just made every person who came into, he knew what everybody wanted in their coffee. He would know when you walked in the door, and he made everybody feel at home and as though they were treated special. And I think for that period of time that he did that job, that was his vocation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that person could be more fulfilled in doing that work than a person making 10 times as much money.
Mm-hmm. Let us go back to our callers at 614-292-8513. Bob, you're on the line as well. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Bob.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment, as I did to the young lady that answered the phone. I guess it took me 50-some years, and I am now retired, to really find something that I have enjoyed. I get a joy out of it 3 days a week. I deliver meals to seniors up in Delaware County, and it's just it's a joy to do it. And I guess, well, I look forward to every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, mm-hmm. and I thank you for listening.
Bob, let me ask you, why is that joyful for you? What is it about it?
It's fulfilling to me. It's doing a service to the community that their community needs. There's some of these folks live in homes that, dear God, you'd think they were abandoned houses when you pull up to them. But they're always joyful and happy to see you and thankful. And we're always asking each other how we're doing because, I'm a senior too.
Uh-huh.
So it just is fulfilling, I guess. And I'm trying to, I think Woody Hayes used to say it, I'm trying to pay ahead.
Yes. So, he says you can't pay back, but you can pay ahead. Right.
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 Exactly.
Well,
so
thanks,
Bob.
Thank you
for your program.
Thanks for sharing that with us. So you know, we can find that fulfillment anywhere. And, of course, very frequently, Tom, it's not necessarily a job that's going to pay anything. It could be volunteer work.
No, that's right. I wanted to, tell just briefly a story of my father. He's 95 years old now, and he just he almost quit his job 2 weeks ago. I mean, he's had this job. He was a plumbing instructor all his life, and then he retired and began working at a hospital And he found he was very good at working with people with dementia or, people who are a little disoriented. And so he worked with these people, and he's been doing it now for a number of years. And here he is, 95 years old, you know. I mean, he has found another vocation. You know, that's what I was trying to say. And you pointed out that this vocation is not just one thing. Sometimes you work at a job for a while, and it really is your calling. And then you go into something else, and that too is your calling.
Now, your father, does he do this on a volunteer basis?
He does. He's a volunteer, yes. Mm-hmm. But it was a job he had to compete for. He called me and said, Tom, all my references are dead. What am I going to do? he had a problem there.
Yeah.
But he got the job, and he loves it. And, it's very fulfilling to him, even at this point in his life. He never would have anticipated doing this.
Does he do it 40 hours a week or 20 or...
No, he did it for, he must have done it for, he probably did it for about 25 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And recently he's pulled back because he doesn't want to drive anymore because he's, at this age, doesn't want to endanger everybody.
Okay. Next caller here is Charlotte. Hi, Charlotte. You're with us.
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to make a comment that in a lot of those service jobs that don't necessarily pay anything, I bet you find that the people who do really well at it and make you feel happy work for management that are bright enough to treat them as assets to the business rather than as cost centers.
Oh, sure, of course.
To be recycled.
Yeah.
There's that to be said. And then the other thing was there are lots of charitable organizations doing who would love to have a retired or semi-retired dentist work with some of their clientele who cannot afford to go to a regular dentist. So I would submit that there are lots of opportunities out there, if you have a professional skill, to give back to the community. And I would even be willing to support that political party that would exempt you from any kind of liability lawsuits if you were willing to do that as a good soul for the community.
Tell me more your thoughts.
Yeah, it's a wonderful idea. We have so much wasted, so much wasted opportunity that way. Again, if I can speak about my father as an example, he taught plumbing all his life. He really loves the whole idea of water and how we get water and our clean water. And he's been trying for years to go to schools to see if the schools will let him come in and tell students about water and how they get their water clean and where the refuse goes. And nobody has let him do that yet. You know, he's tried to volunteer. And I think that's probably, there's a bit of ageism still about retired people that we don't want them around, or we don't have time and our schedules are full, so we don't have time for a creative idea. The one that you're suggesting now is a very creative idea. It wouldn't take much to make it happen. But we fall into these habits of thought and all these regulations, and we think there's no way to do anything differently. That's the difficulty we have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, John.
Charlotte, thank you. A few more minutes here with the spiritual writer Thomas Moore. His new book is A Life at Work, The Joy of Discovering What You Were Born to Do. We're at 614-292-8513. Tom, also I think it's very intriguing. You say that when we're looking to see what our life's work might be, we should look for things like signs and symbols and intuitions and feelings. There's not going to be a big clear-cut arrow pointing the way for us. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yes, I think that we have to read the world around us. We have to read the signs. So if an opportunity comes along for a new kind of work and you're already settled in something, I think you have to read that sign. You know, I mean, you can dismiss it and say, well, it's just really not practical now and so on. But we have to read those signs. The world is telling us what we can do every day. This also ties into another thought of mine, and that is that if you're going to live life instead of just protect yourself from it, but really live life, you're going to have to live a life of change. Life is not something that remains the same forever. That you look around you, there's nothing in the world that's really alive that remains the same. So change is part of it. And I'm not saying we should always be changing in a crazy way and never being stable and all that. But I think that you have to read the signs of the world telling you you have a new opportunity here. Maybe you could, like what people are suggesting in our conversation today, some wonderful ideas. We could listen to those things and say, let's not just dismiss them. Let's see how we can make them come to be. So I'm suggesting a way of life where you read the signs around you, even very subtle. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever have a sign in your life that might have been very subtle but pointed you in a direction?
Yes, I would say one of the signs I've had when things have really gotten bad, I have had physical symptoms. You know, I remember one time just having sores in my mouth or a stomach upset or something of that sort. And sometimes I have to read those signs to say, well, you know, I haven't been paying attention to what the world is telling me. Mm-hmm. I have to move on. There were times in my life when I had to move on, and I only knew it because of my physical symptoms.
Very interesting. And those can be easily ignored, I think.
You could easily explain them away. You can explain away anything.
Yeah.
You know, because you can just look at the world factually, and you don't read it. You don't interpret it. I'm suggesting that we interpret, use our imaginations, and interpret the things that are going on.
Also, of course, that's—I don't know if we'd say that's a negative sign, but it's a sign that there's some trouble pointing to a way. Are there also examples of some encouraging signs, some delightful thing that points away?
Yes, there are all kinds of things that, in a positive way, can maybe tell you what you might be able to do in your life. You know, one of the things that I think is something worth paying attention to is when you meet somebody and they're telling you their life story and you feel some envy for what they're doing, or you can picture yourself in their position doing what they do. Now, I'm not saying that you should just try to copy them then, but you could read that sign and say, well, is that saying something about me? Is that stirring up some life in me, some desire? Something I'd like to do. Maybe not in exactly the same way, but there's something about this other person's life that appeals to me and makes me off balance, because now I can't just settle into my old job anymore because I'm thinking about some other possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Back to our callers now. Hi, Will. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to get your guest thoughts on let me give you a brief story here. I moved to Columbus after graduating with what amounts to a computer science degree, and the difficulty in finding a rewarding job basically wound me up delivering sandwiches. And I've got to say that working very late hours and a lot of hours, but it was probably the most fun that I've ever had in a job. And I just kind of wanted to get his thoughts on something as simple as delivering food.
Well, what was fun about that for you?
You get to meet so many interesting people. You know, it was primarily students, but going to each one of the delivery spots was always an adventure, because you never really knew what was going to come up. You know, in the campus area, there's always quite a bit of activity going on late at night.
Sure.
So, Will, would there be a big difference then between doing the computer science work in terms of people and this job with delivering food?
Well, the people are people, but really there's you can make a distinction whether people are actually in school or out of it, and how they go about their daily life and how they react to situations and that type of thing. But it's certainly a dynamic place that where I'm at now. I've since left that job, but working at a computer all day compared to driving around all day, just dropping off sandwiches is certainly a big change.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people, most of us maybe, have had jobs that have not been at the very center of our career. You know, not a job that really puts us on this line toward our career, and yet they can be very rewarding. I think it's really good to read that too, to pay attention to that feeling, saying this was really good. Something about just delivering food to people was very fulfilling, and to put that in the basket, you know, kind of in your keep it in mind as you go along, and maybe find other ways as time goes on to resurrect that feeling, and maybe a job or a job situation that would allow you to have that experience again.
Will, do you think there's a way you can do that?
Oh, I certainly hope so. Okay. I've since taken on freelancing in addition to the regular job. So that in addition, you know, has given me the chance to talk to many other different individuals at the same time. So.
Yes, there's food for the soul and food for the mind, too.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Thanks very much. We have time for one more caller here before we close, and that is Mickey. Hello, Mickey.
Hello. Good afternoon. I like to say that your outlook about your vocation or about anything in life, you know, it has to do with your cultural DNA. As far as work is concerned, is your work ethic. At the age of 65, I was a freshman at OSU, a five-year engineering, because I realized that I had to have something to make money. I did not necessarily like engineering, but I realized that's what the money was. And at the same time, I found a hobby. I videotaped social events in order to have some fun. However, no matter what work I was doing, my cultural ethic, my work ethic said, I have to do the best thing I can, and I found pleasure in trying to excel in whatever I did. I hated work. I'm 75. I had to go to work out at, you know, at the gym. But I go four times a week because I realize I have to do. It has nothing to do with you. You don't get a job because you love it. You get a job to make enough money to raise a family. You get a hobby to do something that entertains you.
Well, let's talk about that. Tom, you mentioned that before, that sometimes for some people, yeah, the job might be just to bring money in the door for the family. And what you really love is going to be something you do outside the job.
Yes. You know, the example I give of that is the poet Wallace Stevens from Hartford. He was an insurance executive, and he said that he had that job, and he got along with it okay, so that he didn't have to be a starving poet. He wanted to make a living. He also said he wanted to be like other people and have an ordinary job. On the other hand, he did say that his life was fulfilled with his poetry. I think that's a good example, you know, that there's no one pattern for everybody, and I'm not trying to say there's one way to go about this. Each person can find a way to kind of stitch together a life that will, in its various components, will create a life work, a sense of fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And it might be more through the hobby than the job. I agree with that.
By the way, just in the minute or so left, I wonder with Wallace Stevens if he spoke more about his insurance job, whether he didn't get some pleasure out of that as opposed to thinking of it as a...
Well, I've read his letters. If you read his letters, you get a sense he was very involved in it. He did get a lot of pleasure out of it. But he didn't see it as his life work, you know, as the thing that really, really gave him the deepest satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. So we should look for, if we're not sure we're doing the work we love, we should be aware of signs and symbols and intuitions and feelings and attractions to what other people might be doing in their lives or attractions to a particular issue there's all these kinds of things that we can do to sit and really think it through and come up with the work that we love, and more than one work, maybe.
Yes. Yes, I always say that the soul operates by desire. You know, I'm very positive about desire. So you pay attention to those things that are appealing, the attractions, those things that you desire, you daydream about. Daydreaming is really an important way of finding what your life work is, mm-hmm. too.
Thomas Moore, A Life at Work is Tom's new book. It's subtitled The Joy of Discovering What You Were Born to Do. Tom, always a great pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
A pleasure to be with you, Fred.
The news is next on listener-supported WOSU, WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from Marburn Academy High School, a college prep program for students with ADHD and or dyslexia. Information about their upcoming high school open house at 433-0822 or at marburnacademy.org.